Women still aren't making it all the way to the top positions in corporate America. Among Fortune 500 companies, only 6% have CEOs who are women. The slow progress of women to the upper echelons of leadership raises questions our next guest tried to answer. She asked women who almost made it what happened.
Susan Chira joins us now. She's a senior correspondent on gender issues for the New York Times, where she just wrote the piece, Why Women Aren't CEOs. Susan, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, Susan, in your piece, you talked with 24 CEOs, you talked with would-be chief executives, headhunters, deans of business schools. What did they have to say to you overall about why more women don't go on to become CEOs?
Well, it was a really fascinating set of issues, and I think that their reluctant conclusion is there's a lot more bias, resistance, and sense of discomfort with women achieving that level of power than anyone wanted to think. And what a lot of people said to me was, look, okay, we understand that, you know, it takes a while to work your way to the top. Let's be patient. Let's work hard. Let's check all the boxes, do everything, fulfill all the requirements, and in time our numbers will swell. But here we are 40-plus years after women have entered the workforce and stayed in the workforce, and there's still a really paltry number who have become CEOs. And so they have concluded that it's really more systemic and more subtle than they wanted to believe. And some of the things that they cited were that it's an incredibly competitive universe, of course, and women are often perceived to be easier targets. Men, as one woman said to me, they play a 24/7 game of dodgeball, and you're getting hit in the head all the time, and they figure they can knock you out first, and then they'll knock out the guys. So the corporate politics are rough and tumble, and men are socialized and skilled in playing them in ways that some women haven't been socialized and trained to do. In addition, it's a very male world, and when you ascend past a certain level, you know, for a while, you can get ahead by sort of doing your job really well and delivering the profits or whatever measure your company sets for you. But when it comes to the so-called C-suite from which a CEO will be chosen, there are a lot more intangible qualities. Who's a leader? Who's visionary? Who gets along well? Who do we see as ready? And men have had more difficulty seeing women as ready or accepting them into that world as peers on the whole than we thought.
I want to talk about that competitive aspect that you mentioned, that it can be pretty rough at the top where people are vying for that possible CEO slot. And you talked to some women who said women haven't really been socialized to fight for themselves. It doesn't always seem natural to women to get in there and advocate, sometimes get tough. What did you hear about that?
Yes, what I think is interesting is this is not to suggest that women can't be steely or assertive or highly competent or aggressive, but I think men are less embarrassed at promoting themselves, at saying, I did this, I own this, this is my accomplishment, and by the way, person A or B, you know, is nowhere as good as me. I think, again, there are generalities, there are exceptions, but on the whole, I think that, you know, to get ahead, you have to be very assertive about what you've accomplished. You have to be adept at corporate politics, and some women are, but a lot are less so. And you have to be unembarrassed about jockeying for position. This is the hard fact of life. But for women, often when they do those things, they're perceived as aggressive or bitchy or obnoxious or intolerable. You know, their displays of aggression, if they exert them, are also received more harshly, research has shown, than men.
That kind of gets at the idea of what a CEO is supposed to be like, at least what society thinks a CEO is supposed to be like. And it sounds as though some of these women who are vying for this top spot, people would say, oh, you know, that person is reliable or dependable, but they don't have, maybe they don't have gravitas, or they don't have that vision.
Well, the dean of the Kellogg School of Business at Northwestern said to me, I used to like the term gravitas, but now I just think it's code for not like me, you know? And I think that I think that there are intangibles as to who is seen as visionary and bold and creative. And one of the women said to me, if she had to write a book about women in business, the title would be Dependable Backup. So I think there are those perception problems. And I do want to say, you know, not all women who make it, you know, or men should be seen as sort of vicious sharks, you know, in an ocean of blood. It's just that you have to be tough-minded and you have to be assertive and you have to be unembarrassed about saying, hey, I'm good at what I do, and here's proof. And that has culturally sometimes been challenging. But at the same time, you know, you need to be, your attributes need to be recognized by people, and it's been shown again and again that women are more likely to be overlooked. They're less likely to be seen as having that magic, special, intangible stuff.
You talked to one woman who said that to be seen as equal to the men that she was, her peers, she had to exceed them in the amount of money that she made. So did you get the sense that to compete, women actually had to outperform men, not just equal them, but outperform them?
I think that a number of the women I talked to did feel that way. And I think there's something that I found troubling, and a lot of the women I talked to found troubling, which is this sense that, you know, we still maybe have more discomfort with women exerting power, with women who are unapologetically interested in power and displaying ambition. They have a little more trouble being accepted and being seen as likable or, as we discussed, you know, acceptable. So there's both the idea that you have to kind of prove yourself over and over again, possibly more than men do, and the problem that when you play the man's game, you're seen as a really horrible person that no one wants to work for or with.
Susan Scheer is with us right now, senior correspondent on gender issues for The New York Times, where she just wrote a piece called Why Women Aren't CEOs. And Susan, one comment that someone else made to you along the way, she said it's lonely. Is that a factor for women? Because there's not a big pool of peers for women when they're at these levels. How does that factor in?
I think it's very important. I talk to people who have done research. There's an interesting initiative being sponsored by the Rockefeller Foundation, and one of the things they're doing is interviewing women who did become CEOs because they want to get a pool of experiences and advice that aspiring women can draw on just because they're so lonely. And there is a sense that you don't hear enough from other women who can tell you how to do it in whatever style works for you. And so I think the ranks get lonelier. You're an outlier. You're the exception. You're the only woman in the room. Look, you know, if you want to make it, you can deal with that. But it does mean you don't have a lot of comradeship, and you don't have the instant rapport that you might have, that men have with each other.
Now, in terms of the phrase confidence gap, that's something we've been hearing for a while, that women might not be as ready to talk up their accomplishments. Is that something that you see women at these upper reaches of power? Is it still something they're susceptible to them, even when they're at the top, in the C-suite maybe, almost at that number one position?
I think that by the time they get to the C-suite, a lot of them are very confident. But a number of women said to me that earlier in their careers, they had to have men who believed in them persuade them to take on jobs because they'd say, I'm not sure that I can do it. There was a great anecdote which, you know, is told around business circles of someone's giving a corporate presentation and they ask for an expert on breastfeeding to raise hands. And this man raises his hand based on the fact his wife was breastfeeding and he watched her. And none of the women in the audience, many of whom were mothers who had breastfed, raised their hands. I mean, they were the real experts.
Oh, boy.
So they didn't think they were. So, but I do think that, you know, when women get up higher, I heard a lot of very confident women that I spoke with, but a lot of them said it took them time to believe in themselves, maybe more time than their male peers took.
Now, Susan, this is something that you've been through yourself as someone who has been in the corporate world. Talking to all of the people that you did, hearing all this, did it put any pieces together for you about what needs to change?
Yes, I think there are a number of things that need to change. Yes, I have been a senior executive at the New York Times. I've had a wonderful career. I'm very lucky. I've experienced being the only woman in the room and the first woman in this and that. And so a lot of what I talked to them about certainly resonated. And it's very rewarding when you get there. But I think what needs to change is, one, women really need much more active encouragement and systemic encouragement in their companies. Promising women need to be identified and actively, you know, in business circles, they talk about the difference between having a sponsor and a mentor. A sponsor is somebody who's got the power to make things happen for you. You need someone in the room where the decision-making is saying, you know what, that woman is great, and I am going to vouch for her. So, you know, women can't do it without men believing that it's important and helping them achieve it. They need more women to support them and to rely on a pool of their experience to help them. I think that it's, of course, clear that we need to understand the burdens that many women shoulder for family responsibilities and how to help the workplace be less about face time and more about measurable results that you deliver when you can, how you can. But, you know, a lot, it can't just be women. Men have to be active partners in seeing this as important and valuable and a source of strength. Because women sort of swimming against the tide on their own, that won't happen. I think the last 40 years suggests it's still such a hard road without more self-examination by men about why they might be resistant to this.
I want to get a caller on with us now. Julie is with us from Duluth, Minnesota. Julie, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm wondering about something in terms of the scope of the discussion here, taking it back a little more big picture, and I wonder to what extent it's been studied, if at all, whether women want this increasingly. And let me give you an example. I have a graduate degree, and I know plenty of women and have had friends who have graduate degrees, and very few of us that have said, I want to be a CEO someday. What I see happening instead is, I mean, certainly competent women going for other goals like starting their own company. Or, you know, my goal in life now, because I'm in my 50s and I'm certainly not going to climb any corporate ladder anymore, and I gave up on that idea long ago because of how much you have to conform and then, you know, nothing happens. So, you know, but instead I feel freer now because I just turned away from that. I feel freer to pursue a goal of freedom, basically, and being able to do what I want to do, not necessarily be rich, but I've chosen another way to be successful.
Julie, thank you so much for that call. And the basic question there, Susan, is do women want to be CEOs? A lot more context there, but what do you think?
Well, I think it's a very important question. The reason that I talked to number two women is that they passed that bar. They wanted to be. Those women wanted to be. Those women had decided to stick it out and try for that number one spot, and a lot of them still didn't make it. So I agree that there's a lot of attrition, and there's a lot of attrition for very good reasons. It's a brutal work life. There often isn't a lot of autonomy. There's a lot of barriers. There was a lot of family challenges, and a lot of women do choose entrepreneurship exactly for those reasons, and there's no doubt about that. But I tried to take that factor and say, let's look at the experiences of those women who decided that for whatever reason they wanted that goal.
Susan, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Susan Chira is a senior correspondent on gender issues for The New York Times.